At noon. Oh, and a huge shout out to Miguel Noguera, our audio engineer. He and Inga have just given birth to Alexander and Sophia. Welcome to the world, kids. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Always news in Dearborn and the surrounding area that we have to share with you. In case you missed it, in case you're not reading those papers like we tell you you should, even though these days I have to say it's probably more important to go on the internet to certain websites. And I mentioned those during my show, the sources that I use, because, well, first of all, even if the papers cover a story, the websites will have it days, if not a week or more earlier. So it's always good to have an important information earlier, I think. If it matters to you, it matters to you, and well, it should. That's what I always say. So we're going to begin by just going through some of the highlights from the papers, though, in case you didn't see them. And we're starting with something that I think is a correction. I didn't listen to the podcast of our show from last week, but I believe I indicated that the Dearborn Symphony's home tour, the Dearborn Symphony home tour, which is an annual event, was going to be last Saturday. I hope I didn't say that. But the good news is, if you listened last week, you're listening this week, and if you were out trying to walk around the neighborhood last Saturday and didn't find any help at the Historical Museum to get you started, well, tomorrow's the day. And so we got that one wrong, if I did get it wrong, and I think I did. I keep thinking I said, oh, and coming up tomorrow. No, it isn't. It's it is the 21st tomorrow. Today is May 20th. 2016, and this event happens tomorrow. A variety of homeowners will open their doors for viewing, and musicians will play classical music in each setting, a feature that is unique to the tour. Well, and also WHFR radio overnight, by the way. We don't have any homes to visit, but you can play WHFR in your own home while you're listening to classical music overnight. Yes. About 300 to 600 people typically attend each year, and that raises needed money, about $15,000, in fact, to fund one of the symphony's performances. That's only helps with one performance, folks. That would set up WHFR for about half of a year if we could do that, but oh well. We'll have to find some homes that we can tour. We don't want to be in competition with the symphony, no. Shuttle buses won't be running this year, but chairwoman of the tour, Carla O'Neill, said that the tour was, continued on page 9A, A9 as the pressing guide now calls it, designed to be easy to maneuver on foot. We have it in a pretty walkable neighborhood between Brady and just past Military. There are also two churches where people can stop in. I guess if you're out of breath, need to sit down or something. Several local businesses are also involved this year, offering discounts to tour goers as more businesses have popped up in this area. It's called the Morley neighborhood, and the whole idea is to start by going to between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. tomorrow, May 21st, beginning the tour at the Commandant's Quarters, 21950 Michigan Avenue. That's also known as the part of the Michigan Historical, the Dearborn Historical Commission facility, museum, okay? Purchase tickets in advance for $15, which you could do today, I guess, or $20 the day of the tour, that's per person, at dearbornsymphony.org/home-tour-tickets, but that means there's something to click on there on that page when you get there. So dearbornsymphony.org. If you need more information, you can call them today, probably even 313-565-2424. Dearborn Symphony, 313-565-2424. And by the way, tourgoers can also enjoy an old-fashioned boxed lunch on the grounds for $12 additional and visit vendors located under tents set up on the spacious grounds offering goods such as jewelry, garden art items, jams, jellies, and baked goods. Sounds like the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, kind of, but it did start today. Yes, it did. It started this morning at 9 a.m. and is finishing up at 2 p.m. today. If you're in West Dearborn, it's still time to get over there and check out the vendors for the first Friday of this year for the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market. And it'll be every Friday from now on. I think they're taking a Friday off for 4th of July weekend. But other than that, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And free parking conveniently located all around there now. Remember, there's free parking in West Dearborn almost everywhere. Almost everywhere. Okay, that was the Dearborn Symphony Home Tour. And let's see, anything else from last Sunday's paper? Again, most everything we already talked about. I just don't think I got the home tour straightened out there. Hope there would be a story. I didn't get to go to the annual Michigan Week Luncheon, where Dearborn Heights Mayor Daniel Poletko delivered an updated State of the City address about Dearborn Heights, of course. And that happened on May 18th, but haven't seen a story about that yet. Maybe they didn't have a reporter available. Jody Grumpala is gone now, so from the Press and Guide. So didn't have her to assign it to. Dearborn Times-Herald from this last Wednesday, May 18th. One of the K-9 Corps, that is the K-9 standing for one of the dogs, of course, that they have trained to do a variety of tasks to help the police officers, did pass away. He had a long career with the department and helped a lot of people. And he was trained in several different activities, but looks like he was a fun dog. The Canine Corps, they give names to the dogs. And this dog was named Chase. So maybe you met Chase. I'm sure that's one of the things he could do, is to chase people if needed. All right. Turning pages rapidly here. That story. Okay. Then we're just in the Press and Guide from this 18th. And then I have a lot of updates, brand new stories that aren't in the papers yet. And they're just to my right of me here. Chamber of Commerce honors Teachers of the Year. And this was done by the Chamber of Commerce. So thank you very much. As I've said in the past, the several other ceremonies we've had this year, not enough recognition of teachers, whether good, excellent, good, or average even, not enough recognition of the vast majority of all of them. And so congratulations to all those that won. Too many names to mention here. One of the most important professions in the history of the world, teachers. Vanguard Voices this Sunday. We've mentioned this before, but it is coming up next Sunday, this Sunday, the 22nd. The Vanguard Voices, which is the choir in residence here at Henry Ford College, presents its spring concert Sunday, 4 p.m. in the Michael A. Guido Theater. That's in, of course, the Ford Performing Arts Center. Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. I mean, I always get choked up because we have to say Ford. I know they gave $10 million. Thank you very much, Ford Motor Company, but it should be the Dearborn Community and Performing Arts Center. But Ford has done that all over the country, and the cities need that kind of money desperately. So imagine if Ford didn't donate all that to all the places around the country. How much cheaper could their cars be? Would anybody buy Ford cars if the name Ford wasn't constantly staring them in the face? I wonder. I would hope so. So that vocal concert starts Sunday at 4 o'clock, as I said. And it's under the direction of G. Kevin Dewey. And I always say the G stands for Gee Whiz. Or golly, because he's that good. Or just good. That works, too. 75 voice chorus. And they've just got a wide range of classical pieces they're doing. And it'll be very entertaining at all. This does help raise money for the music department. Reserve seats are $15 and $11, $6 for students, and are available from 11 to 7 Tuesdays through Saturdays at the box office. And so if you get over there today or tomorrow, you could buy the tickets in advance and save a couple bucks. Maybe you can't save. Doesn't say there's a discount there for reserve tickets, but at least to be guaranteed a seat. Big auditorium, but nice to have a guaranteed seat, right? Page Awards for local community theater productions are going to be given out, and the awards celebration is also something that you might want to consider attending. That's going to be at 7:30 p.m. May 24th. That's Tuesday. Also at the Michael Guido Theater inside the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michigan Avenue here in Dearborn. The event, I think, is free. And of course, the musicals that are up for awards that have been done locally, they'll be just like the Tony Awards on TV. There'll be a scene or two, a song or two, performed from each of the, at least the musicals anyway, for entertainment for the evening. So it should be a lot of good fun. Obviously, a lot of people attend because there's a lot of plays that have been done in a lot of community theater groups and high schools and around the area. But that'll be great. 7:30 p.m. next Tuesday. Okay. Now, the fun part. Whoa. All these big stories. I'd like to... Okay. It's going to be a series of four stories in a row here coming up, folks, and it's all about money available in Michigan specifically to help the cities. And how are the cities funded? So the first thing I'm going to listen to a commentary from Jack Lessenberry from this week. He recorded this on Wednesday at Michigan Radio, michiganradio.org. Again, you can subscribe to podcasts from Michigan Radio, including Jack Lessenberry's yourself, and get them when they're hot, when they're brand new, by going to iTunes Music Store. It's free. But here is his version of Snyder's version, Governor Snyder. Remember him? Of Reaganomics.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. A long time ago, when VCRs were state-of-the-art technology, Ronald Reagan became president, and his captains proclaimed a new economic philosophy. We'll give massive tax cuts to everyone, but especially corporations, and that will cause them to create millions more jobs. Formerly unemployed people will become productive taxpayers, and even though they pay lower tax rates, the revenue will come flowing in, and governments, too, will have more money than ever before. They adopted a Kennedy-era slogan. A rising tide lifts all boats, and the revolution's sacred relic was a napkin on which economist Arthur Laffer had supposedly drawn a curve in 1974 showing how all this was supposed to work. Cut taxes, get more revenue. It was a great theory. In practice, it resulted in record federal budget deficits and the beginning of a massive transfer of wealth from the poorer half of the population to the richest few, a pattern that continues today. Most economists regarded the Laffer curve theory pretty much the way George Bush I originally described it, voodoo economics. Regardless, 5 years ago, a businessman named Rick Snyder got himself elected governor of Michigan and tried a slightly crueler version of the same thing. Snyder economics involved massive tax cuts for businesses and corporations, cuts to education, and the taxing of people's pensions. Fortunately for him, Michigan benefited from the national recovery. But the Snyder cuts never produced the jobs we were led to expect, and, according to today's Detroit Free Press, the number of jobs created has actually dropped every year since the Snyder tax cuts took effect. And yesterday we learned that for this year and next, the expected rising tide has left us stranded in the mud. The state is projected to have almost $500 million less than an over-optimistic revenue estimating forecast expected in January. If this were a lurid novel, you might call this the death of Rosie scenario. This resulted in worry lest the legislature use it as an excuse to kill the effort to save Detroit public schools or reduce the help available for stricken Flint. So far, the governor's office indicates that neither is on his agenda, though things like the effort to prevent tooth decay in poor children may take a hit. But there is a solution, and it lies in a chance remark made by the state treasurer yesterday. He said part of the reason for the shortfall was that citizens were spending more on services and less on stuff. Bingo! If you sell me a length of copper pipe, I pay 6% sales tax on it. If I pay you to come install that pipe, I pay no sales tax, and the state gets nothing. Why is this? Because times have changed, and our tax collection ideology hasn't. Back when the sales tax started in the 1930s, we were overwhelmingly a manufacturing state. We made and sold stuff. Now the world has changed. We're primarily a service-driven economy. Not extending the sales tax to most services makes no more sense than not extending it to hybrid cars. The legislature could easily fix this and save Rosie's scenario just by passing a law. But that would sacrifice ideology for reality. So, don't hold your breath.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
MichiganRadio.org. But this is WHFR.FM, our live talk show, news show, opinion show, talking about just Dearborn and the surrounding areas. And I want to go from that. Yes, the state is expecting to not bring in as much revenues and be broke. And I'm going to follow that up with a story, amazingly, from national media, commondreams.org. Okay. And this is from the 19th, yesterday. Okay. The title of the story is Michigan Corporations to Pay $0 in Taxes This Year Despite Crises in Flint and Detroit, and the fact that while Lessenberry said something like the state of Michigan is down $500 million, I read a story somewhere saying that we're down at least $160 million, or they have to make cuts in state government, $160 million. But while that happens, this is also true. Michigan corporations pay $0 in taxes this year. And here's the story. While residents of beleaguered Flint face rate hikes for the city's lead-poisoned water, you heard about that, right? Right. Their water is undrinkable out of the tap, unusable out of the tap. And they pay some of the highest water rates in the state right now, I understand, and it's going up. Well, it's certainly not their fault, is it? They should be getting free bad water and surely be getting, hopefully in a year or so, I think it should, no, don't make them suffer for more than a year. Come on. How would you like to suffer with bad water for more than a year and not be able to sell your house at all? Because who would buy if it's got bad water, right? Well, if it can be fixed in a year, of course, it's going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars after what else was done. But then I think the people of Flint ought to have free water forever. Okay? Free clean water forever. You know, I kind of agree with Donald Trump. Oh, my God, did I say that? When he was talking to Megyn Kelly, he said, well, I don't really believe in apologizing. You know, I don't, yeah, you know, it's, and then he apologized to her. Whoops, sorry. He said sorry. That's an apology, right? I think reparations are what's more important. How do you make up for the bad that you did or said? Okay, how do you make up for it? That's the more important thing. You know, some criminals deserve, I guess, and the only appropriate thing to do is to put them in jail, away from the rest of society, take away their freedom. But more important, and I think in a majority of cases, what can they do good for society to make up for what they did that was bad, as defined by our laws? Whatever you call it, I call it reparations. Okay. So, Michigan this year is projected, the story goes on, to give corporations a net refund, even while it faces a budget shortfall. Oh, yeah, it disagrees with Jack Lessenberry, of $460 million. Officials are projecting a net loss of $99 million in revenue from the state's principal business taxes. And that was reported by the Detroit News as corporations, quote, effectively contribute nothing to the state's coffers in 2016, unquote. This shortfall, quote, should be a wake-up call for Lansing Republicans hell-bent on smothering government with cuts and miserly policy, and it shouldn't be an excuse for lawmakers to withhold necessary help from the, in quotes here, mostly, not quotes, parentheses, mostly poor, mostly black, city of Flint, Detroit public schools. Now, that was argued by the editorial board of the Detroit Free Press. Now, the News and Free Press are joined at the hip in terms of the same owners, and they're both, in my mind, very conservative these days. Steven Henderson, slightly moderate, okay, over there at the Detroit Free Press. But by in the bigger picture, these people, these two papers are not radical, left-wing, progressive, to any way, shape, or form. Okay. That's my opinion. Of course, all opinions expressed in the show, including mine, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, not faculty, staff, administrators, or students. But we hope so. Anyway, the article goes on. The cause of the budget shortfall is a confluence, coming together, of recent tax code rewrites. Automakers and other large companies have continued to take advantage of enormous tax credits enacted after the Great Recession, I guess that was 2008, in an attempt to keep jobs in the state. While under Republican Governor Rick Snyder, the state's corporate income tax was rewritten in 2011 to cut business taxes to a flat 6% rate, at the same time that it increased personal income taxes and the state sales tax. Policy experts have previously argued that this change not only unfairly burdened individual taxpayers, but also failed to instigate the job growth it was intended to. Yeah, where are the jobs? If those, you know, this is what Reaganomics was all about. Trickle-down theory was all about. And it was disproven back in the 70s, or certainly by the 80s, that if you give the corporations a free ride, they're going to buoy up our society by giving more jobs to more people. It doesn't happen. They just collect more profits. That's what happens. Why? Because the number one principle of doing business is to make profit for your owners, whoever they may be. Could be shareholders, or it could be a private company and just go to a family or a single person. But that's their priority. So guess what? If that's your priority and you got a lot of extra money coming in or lower taxes, you're not going to give it back to anybody. You're not going to expand your business. You're not going to do more R&D because you're already making a bundle. And who's it being taken away from? The poor, in effect, because of poor government services that are possible. I mean, the services are not possible that makes the poor people any better off. Or gives them better education. I'm adding all these things in. Okay. Corporate tax credits, according to the article from CommonDreams.com, will drain $1.03 billion from the state this year, reports the Detroit News, while revenue from the corporate income tax is projected to be only $932 million. The state treasury indicated that a 20% drop in annual business revenue was to blame for the nearly $1 billion net loss in corporate income tax. So, I guess companies in Michigan aren't doing good business. Wonder why. Maybe they're not producing the right products that people want at the lower cost that they could afford. Article goes on. Meanwhile, personal income taxes are expected to bring in about $9.4 billion, sales tax about $7 billion, and $950 million are expected to be collected from the so-called sin taxes on alcohol and the state lottery. So you get that? So personal income tax brings in over $9 billion, but corporate tax credits will drain $1 billion away. And, you know, this whole tax credit thing, one of the most conservative policy think tanks in Michigan, the Mackinac Center, or Mackinac Center, if you will, they don't agree with that. It's amazing. And a kind of libertarian, small L, libertarian. Look it up. It's not people that like to go to orgies every night. Libertarians. Normally they're for laissez-faire free markets. And in this case, it's extended to, without regulation, unfortunately, but it's extended to the idea that you need a level playing field with business. That you don't want tax credits for some, but not for the others. Not for the big, not for the little, or vice versa even. And so they're totally against all these credits, which do cost the state a ton of money and cost the average citizen of Michigan a lot in reduced services. Wow. Detroit News continues, quote, fuel taxes and registration fees are also set to increase next year as part of a new road funding plan that critics say does not go far enough to reverse deteriorating conditions, unquote. Democratic State Senator Curtis Hertel Jr. told the local news outlet, it's a real problem when people are footing the entire bill and still not getting good services. We should be frustrated. We should be angry. The Detroit Free Press argues that the state lawmakers have the means to fix the budget shortfall. They just don't want to. And here's the direct, big-time three or four sentences from the Free Press. Here's the final irony. The state's rainy day fund contains sufficient dollars to plug this budget hole, but we're pessimistic. Some House Republicans seemingly believe they owe nothing to either Flint's 100,000 residents or Detroit's 47,000 students. We fear the looming shortfall will provide them political cover to shirk their obligation to those Michiganders. But here, political cover is analogous to cowardice and the kind of craven policymaking that will do real harm to some of the state's most vulnerable citizens. And there's no excuse for that. Of course, in these very needy, desperate areas, Flint, Detroit, Dearborn, we've got Democrats. And I'm not saying Democrats are inherently better than Republicans, but in this case, in terms of budgets and handling the needs that are greatest for our state citizens, the Democrats, and it's my opinion, but the Democrats are of the right opinion, agreeing in this case with the very conservative Detroit Free Press. Indeed, local news outlet MLive, that's another one I consult regularly, MLive.com, points out that state lawmakers have already indicated that the budget hole may mean that Snyder's proposal to allocate $195 million to help Flint cope with the water crisis is at risk. MLive reported, with big cuts needed. This is a quote from State Budget Director John Roberts, said everything was on the table. That's what he said. Everything was on the table. I would say right now from our end, everything's on the table. We're going to look at the Flint commitments very seriously. End quote, State Budget Director John Roberts. Thanks very much for being so open-minded to look at everything. Now, going on here, I have to play this interview because I can't take up 9.5 minutes rambling in my usual way. And here is this report, and it's based on an extended story that's at BridgeMI.com. It's Bridge Magazine, but it's BridgeMI.com about the Flint syndrome. Fewer cops, abandoned parks, and why more cities will crumble unless Michigan changes. My interview with Mayor O'Reilly last month on this show. He indicated that we've got to have a different funding method for cities. And the crisis is caused by the state. Got that? The state of Michigan. Cities haven't done anything wrong. Got that? Well, here is Ron French, who is a writer at Bridge Magazine, talking to MichiganRadio.org this week.
A lot of headlines coming out of the water crisis in Flint comes down to a basic problem. The city was starved for cash, and that led to a series of bad decisions, and, well, here we are today. But Flint is not the only Michigan city caught in a cash crunch. All across the state, cities are starved for revenue. Most of them not because of something the city has done, but because of things the state has done. Bridge Magazine writer Ron French is here with us to talk about a report he co-wrote with Mike Wilkinson, Flint Syndrome. Fewer cops, abandoned parks, town fundraisers to buy fire equipment, cuts to youth programs. Ron, what's going on here?
Yeah, it sounds pretty depressing, doesn't it? Well, this is something that a lot of people don't realize because it's happened gradually. You know, if you live in a city and over a period of 10 years, a park gets less and less taken care of, you don't really notice it as much. Mm-hmm. But when you take a step back, and Flint, unfortunately, has put us in a position of trying to take a look at that, you find that what happened in Flint really is happening to a lesser extent in other ways in cities all across Michigan. And it's not just these urban cities that some people say might be mismanaged. You have cities like Troy. You think, what could be wrong with Troy, you know, where 50% of their police are gone? Ann Arbor, my goodness, how much of a stronger city could you have than Ann Arbor? 1 out of 4 police are gone from a decade ago. There's a systemic issue going on here.
So it's this drip, drip, drip of things happening that gets to the point where you're calling this Flint syndrome. So define what you mean by Flint syndrome.
Well, everyone knows that in Flint there were a series of mistakes that led to the water, mm-hmm. drinking water being poisoned. It's a tragedy. It's a national tragedy. When you have the president coming in, you know there's an issue there. But at the root of those mistakes, what led to those mistakes were just a systemic disinvestment in that city. And it was something that the city had no control over. And why we call it the Flint syndrome is that people do not realize how many other cities across Michigan are dancing along the edge of a financial cliff, one mistake away from the same sort of thing happening to them.
And this isn't just something that we could say, well, the Great Recession hit and really punched our state in the gut. This goes back decades.
This goes back decades. This began in the 1970s and with a series of decisions, starting with, I won't bore you with all the details, mm-hmm. but with something called the Headley Amendment
Give
in
us
the 1970s.
The hits. I remember the campaign for the Headley Amendment.
Yes.
Very.
And then the 1990s with Prop A combined what they did is that they limited a city's ability to collect property taxes. And that is how a city survives in Michigan, is on property taxes. Basically, the revenue a city collects from property taxes could go down rapidly, as it did during the recession, but it could not recover rapidly. After the recession, a city like Farmington Hills was one example. Okay, in Farmington Hills, it will take until the year 2038 for it to recover its property value revenue. Even though the property values have gone back up, mm-hmm. the revenue the city collects will not go up till 2038, and that's even without taking into account inflation.
The cities are handcuffed because of the Headley Amendment and Prop A and other factors, but it basically handcuffs them in order to collect revenue.
Absolutely. One person described it as the cities are bound and gagged, and there's no way for them to get out of it because they do not have control over the situation. On top of those two things, the other revenue stream is revenue sharing.
How does that work?
Revenue sharing is a percent of sales tax that the state is supposed to give back to cities, okay, to sort of even out funding mm-hmm. from city to city. And part of it is constitutional, and they have to give a certain percentage. But part of it is there was a law saying how much they were supposed to give, but it's up to the legislature every year to decide. And so what are you going to do? Well, let's give some more money to something else. And that makes sense. You have to make choices. To make choices. And this wasn't just a Republican or Democrat thing. Yeah. It happened under Governor Granholm as a Democrat and now under Governor Snyder as a Republican. But since 2002, cities have been shorted by $5.5 billion. And you think about how much money that could make a difference, how much that could make a difference for cities like Flint. Flint's been shorted like $63 million itself.
So as my mother used to call it, borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, doing that shifting and taking money away from the cities, yet not giving the cities the ability to be able to raise their own taxes in order to make it up.
Absolutely. The good example here, a parallel that shows you the difference is they've done the same thing over years mm-hmm. at times with higher education, where they've cut higher education funding. Well, universities can turn around and increase tuition. Obviously, that has an impact on people, but there's a way out for them. Cities don't have a way out to collect that money they're losing from the state.
I'm talking with Bridge Magazine writer Ron French about his series of reports called Flint Syndrome. You contrast what things are like for cities like Flint and other Michigan cities with right across the border in Toledo. Here we have a post-industrial Rust Belt city, but things are different.
Absolutely. You would think that if a city were going to have problems here, they'd certainly have the same problems in Toledo. Now, Toledo's not Ann Arbor.
Right.
But it's a post-industrial city, lots of same sort of problems, but they're paying their bills. They have a police force that is twice the size per capita as Flint, and they have a good-sized middle class. living inside the city limits.
Paying taxes.
Paying taxes.
And they don't have Prop A and Headley.
Correct. And so the differences are, in Ohio, cities are allowed much more leeway in how they can collect income through revenue streams from their citizens.
And that's the lifeblood, as you say, that keeps the city going.
Absolutely. And, you know, no one wants to pay taxes, obviously. You know,
and clearly that was a big popular pitch in 1978 when Headley passed.
Right.
Right? Was that kind of why people bought into that? Yes, I want my taxes lowered.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's only years later you start to see the impact. When you have cities, the city of Wayne has been reduced to the point that they are holding fundraisers to pay for new fire hoses. And they just had finished one for a new Jaws of Life, too. Now, when you get to the point where you're basically having bake sales to pay for your police and fire departments, there's a systemic problem there.
Are you a voice crying in the wilderness or about this? I'm sure there are a lot of conversations happening with a lot of municipal finance experts. Is anyone in Lansing listening?
That's a good question there, Cynthia. Yeah, I think there is some discussion of this now. That's mm-hmm. beginning. Particularly, and no one would wish us anyone, but I think that because of Flint, because of that crisis, we can no longer avoid this conversation. That there has to be a talk about how we are funding our cities. And one obvious thing is making different decisions about how much revenue sharing we're giving our cities. The other is the emergency manager law, which is very different in other states. Here, we're a cut-only sort of system. Once you get in trouble, you come in and you balance the budget as quickly as you can.
So you're chopping.
You're chopping. Let me give you an example. Another state we visited here for this series of stories was Pennsylvania. Mm. They have cities that aren't financially stressed also. But this pretty much sums up the difference between the two states. In Michigan, when a city becomes financially distressed, they are taken control of by the Department of Treasury. Okay, in Pennsylvania, it's the Department of Community and Economic Development. Now, think about the different mindset you have there. In Pennsylvania, the whole point when a city gets taken over is how do we build the revenue in that city so they can maintain themselves over a long period of time? Here, we cut as much as we can to balance the budget and we get out of town. Well, that doesn't change the systemic problems mm-hmm. that those cities are facing.
I guess the question is, these are things that we as citizens, we're feeling the effect of fewer police and bake sales to buy fire hoses. What can we do as individuals to push for this? And would another step be a drive to get rid of Headley and Prop A? And would that ever pass?
That could be a drive to mm-hmm. address those issues. That's a big, heavy lift.
Big, heavy lift.
I have a hard time seeing that happening,
yes.
At least in the short term. I think if there was concern about this, then when, you know, we have elections every couple of years mm-hmm. and you ask your legislators who are campaigning, how do you think cities should be funded? Do you think they should be getting more money? And how do you think that should happen? Put it on their radar. It's easy for legislators, especially with term limits, to lose track of how things were put in place. And they get distracted easily by the latest thing that's going on. So put it on their radar. Ask questions.
And if we continue along the road that we're on?
The cities are just going to get worse and worse. There is no way for them to recover without changes.
Ron French. You will find his series, Flint Syndrome, co-written with Mike Wilkinson, by going to bridgemi.com. Thanks so much for being with us, Ron.
Thank you.
This is Jay Koronek at WHFR.FM, the station making ways. New WHFR Journal. That's the show you're listening to, our public affairs show, each week on Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m. Following up on that story, again, he mentioned Ohio, Pennsylvania, other states raise money for the cities in better ways. Michigan funds its cities differently than most states. That's kind of the reason why Toledo is doing a lot better than Flint. Okay? So maybe we ought not to do our funding of the cities the same way. Mayor O'Reilly, back on April 22nd of the show. Listen to the podcast. Go to WHFR.FM, click on Talk Shows, and click on WHFR Journal, and select April 22nd. And listen to our almost full-hour interview with Mayor John B. O'Reilly, Jr. And especially at the end, you might want to fast forward to about 10 minutes from the end, I ask him the tough question, are we going to have to raise taxes? And his answer was, we need more money. And he thought there was other kinds of ways of raising money. I saw this story this week that follows up on that. Wayne County executive, that's Warren Evans, is out to fix Michigan's broken, quote-unquote, funding model for cities. But what is he doing? He's doing a little tour, a little panel discussion he's taking from city to city. Here's the story, though. This is from mlive.com, Emily Lawyer, from the 16th, which is Monday. When Wayne County Executive Warren Evans took office, he set out to write the county's budget. He did it, but realized about halfway through his first year in office that the way Michigan cities get money is, in his words, broken. Quote, balancing the budget, it made me realize that even running effectively and getting ourselves on firm financial footing, we just didn't have the resources going forward with the existing state of municipal financing. That's, again, Warren Evans. So he's launching a statewide tour entitled Investing in Michigan Communities, Finding Fair Funding for Strong, Successful Communities. Evans is kicking off the tour in Trenton, Michigan, and plans to talk with local officials about financing mechanisms that fuel their communities and challenges they face. In addition to Southeast Michigan, he plans to visit Grand Rapids, Lansing, Flint, Traverse City, and the Upper Peninsula. I wonder if that's at taxpayer expense, probably. The goal is to build consensus around a solution. Evans laid out a problem in his March State of the County address. The county got $418 million less in tax receipts from 2008 to 2014 due to declining property values and limitations on how local municipalities can recover those funds. He plans to hear from local officials statewide on this tour and spend this year gathering information. In 2017, he intends to gather what he has learned and put forward solutions with broad support. Evans is not the only one who has delved into municipal finance lately. Michigan State University researchers have traced local financial problems back to state policies. Okay, this is not Bridge Magazine now. This is Michigan State University researchers, and there's a story about that on nlive.com. And the Michigan Municipal League recently launched a website that aims to educate on Michigan's, quote, abysmal record, unquote, of investing in city governments, local governments. Evans recognized that there are differences between municipalities and there may be disagreement on how to proceed. Quote, if that weren't the case, we'd have a remedy now. But we think that if we know enough about the problem and know enough about the issues that different parts of the state have, that gives us a leg up on trying to craft something that we can all live with, unquote. Around Wayne County, Evans says he hears almost universally that residents want two things, better infrastructure like roads and more public safety workers. And I'm sure Mayor O'Reilly has a few ideas, too, on that. And if he wasn't so busy running Dearborn, he'd probably be part of that tour. And I'm sure he'll be part of the solution because I don't think we could do it in Dearborn by ourselves. I mean, two of the other ways, very well-known ways to increase money in a city that's allowed by state law in Michigan right now is we could ask for another millage. Okay. That's always tough, but we could ask for another millage. Number two, we could do a city income tax that we don't have right now, but that's limited by the state to, I think, 1.5%. The income tax can't be any higher than that. And I think it has to be a flat tax. It can't be a progressive tax where rich people would pay more than poor people, I think. And last but not least, consumption tax. That is a sales tax on top of a sales tax. We don't have that in this area, but many cities around the country, big cities especially, in order to pay the expenses, they actually tax an additional tax on top of the sales tax in their state. By the way, Detroit, this is a big story that you probably already heard. I don't think I have it with me. I'm not sure why, but no, I don't have the story with me, but I just read it that it's been out there for a while. It's one of those things I'm sure was on corporate media. Detroit's population has fallen so far that we're no longer one of the big cities in the U.S. In fact, we've fallen out of the top 20. Back in 1944, during the war, Detroit was the fourth largest city in the United States. Think about that. The fourth largest city in the United States. And now we're not even bigger than El Paso, Texas. And I just think the name of El Paso always thinks of some little semi-ghost town kind of operation. I'm sure it's a very nice modern town, and certainly bigger than Detroit right now, according to the last census. And but Detroit, get the good news they can pull out of it, and the corporate media always wants to find good news about why a city is dying, is that the rate of decline of population is slowing. So we have less people here than before, the last count, but it's not increasing. But it's still decreasing, but more slowly. I don't think that's very positive, but and I mean, of course, why would people live in Flint if they could get somewhere better? Why would people live in Detroit now unless they could get somewhere better? Seriously, I understand that. Okay, so. All right, so good luck to Warren Evans. Good luck to Merrill Riley. He's going to have to pitch something because the budget in Dearborn is going to be in serious trouble when our supplemental millage that was passed in 2011 expires at the end of this year. And so they will have to talk about that, I assume, at city council meetings. He'll have to have a proposal, I think, this fall, but certainly next year, sometime early on. Because the money won't be there, and there's a continual decline in what's called personal property tax, which is not really personal. It's the corporations don't have to pay on stuff in their buildings anymore. And it's being phased out over 3 years. And there is some makeup funds coming from the state of Michigan to the cities who are going to lose out big, but the makeup funds don't equal the amount of money they're losing, of course. Of course. But the corporations love it. Oh, yeah, whoa. More profits. Yep. Okay, moving on to other stories here. We did the heavy-duty stuff for the last half hour or so, so here's some quickie information about Henry Ford College, which we choose to do, not because the college asks us to do, but there's a Hammond Planetarium here on campus, the main campus, Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road, and there are special free performances, if you will, presentations called Fireflies in the Garden. It's a summer star talk throughout this month of May, and it's on Wednesday nights at 7:30. And the only Wednesday coming up is the 28th. Saturday's at 3 p.m. on May 4th, up on the 28th. So there's only, well, they got the dates wrong, of course. Let's get the dates right. Oh, my goodness. How can the college get the Wednesday dates wrong? Okay, the 25th. Okay, Wednesday night, the last Wednesday in May, this month, is the 25th, and that happens to be next week, Wednesday. So get there promptly, though, because doors open 15 minutes before the show. The shore, it says, another misprint here. Before the show, and close promptly at showtime, so you can't get in afterwards, but no reservations are necessary. You just got to be standing in line at least 15 minutes before. That's 7:15 p.m. on Wednesday, May 25th. Okay, and the Saturdays, let's check that date, is okay, May 28th, okay, and that's at 3 p.m. on Saturday, so you better be in line by 2:45. It's in the Henry Ford College Main Campus Science Center, and I think, yes, it's the J Building. Love that name. It's just the initial, folks. It's not my name, no. That's not how it worked out. Although I love science. Okay. And it's room J102. I'm sure there'll be signs up, but it's a planetarium. It's sort of in the center of the Science Center building here on the main campus. So just two more performances. One next week, Wednesday night at 7:30. Be in line by 7:15. And the other a week from tomorrow at 3 p.m., May 28th. So be in line by 2:45. All righty. Also, our 5101 restaurant here has its extremely popular international lunch buffets, and they are one day only, but one day a week. Thursday, May 26th, that is coming up next Thursday. The theme is Mediterranean cuisine. The restaurant will serve cuisine from Italy, Malta, and southern France. Entrees include roasted salmon, Moroccan chicken, and a pasta station. And great fun will be had by all. The seating is from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The cost for each buffet is $12.95 per person, or because it's five buffets in a row here, Thursdays all the way through, $60 if you want all five buffets. First time they've put it together, actually it's $59.95, because that always seems a lot less than 60, right? But so you get a discount in effect, you know, if you divide 5 into 50 of $12, like 95 cents you saved, or 94 cents or whatever. Reservations are requested, though. These are very popular, and you need to call our 5101 restaurant at 313-206-5101. 313-206-5101. On our main campus here at Henry Ford College in the Student Center building. Now, they do have a website, and it says you can reserve a place for yourself at the website, Henry Ford Culinary, C-U-L-I-N-A-R-Y, henryfordculinary.com. So, and the themes in the future, Hawaiian Island, Luau, Spanish New World, European flavors, and then sort of a potpourri at the end, international brunch. Okay. Coming up next Tuesday, we have pre-recorded talk shows on Tuesday from 12 to 1, Big Picture Science, the best science radio show that I could find. And this week, its title is Science Fiction. No one knows what the future will bring, but science fiction authors are willing to take a stab at imagining it. We take our own stab at imagining them imagining it on this show. That's Seth Shostak and Molly Bentley, who are the hosts. Find out what author Bruce Sterling wants to get off his chest. Famous science fiction author, by the way. And what the joke about the neutron walking into a bar to ask the price of beer has in common with H.G. Wells, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Ridley Scott. Definitely looking forward to that. Some things happening around here in the college and at WHFR. Glad to share those bits and pieces. So you say you'd like to do something about the world. Well, there's a Sierra Club of Michigan. Boy, are they active. The Sierra Club Southeast Michigan Group. Okay, they just sent me an email every month because I'm a member. I'm a lifetime member. But you can just go to sierraclub.org, and I think you can get to the Michigan website there. But here's what's coming up next week. Just to give you an idea real quick, on Tuesday, May 24, 6:30 p.m. In Ferndale, a Beyond Coal meeting. And they actually, that group has an office called Beyond Coal, the Beyond Coal office. Beyond Coal. It's open to the public. Any interested person can attend. It's ordinarily on the third Tuesday of the month, but rescheduled this month only. Next Wednesday, May 25th, 6 to 8 p.m., The Future of Energy is going to be a presentation. It's a film presentation from the Alliance to Halt Fermi 3, the third nuclear power reactor that DTE wants to build in Monroe. And there'll be a free screening of the documentary called The Future of Energy. And the event is free and open to the public. Bedford Public Library, 6 to 8 next Wednesday. And also next Wednesday, 6:30 to 8:30, Southeastern Michigan group of Sierra Club Executive Committee is going to be meeting in the Beyond Coal office. That's all. That's in Ferndale, as we mentioned, and rescheduled for this meeting only, open to the public. Any interested person can attend to find out what the hoi polloi of the executive committee of Sierra Club Michigan are doing. Maybe you want to join after you find out. Next Thursday, May 26th, this is a big deal, and the movie is called This Changes Everything. It's going to be at the Detroit Film Theater at the Detroit Institute of Arts. It's a free showing. Good price, huh? The film is based on a book written by Naomi Klein, one of my favorite authors, which is entitled This Changes Everything. Doors open at 6 p.m. This is a good chance for networking until 7 p.m. when the film starts. So there'll probably be a lot of groups there, such as Detroiters Working for Environmental Justice, the East Michigan Environmental Action Council, Ecology Center, that's out of Ann Arbor, Great Lakes Bioneers Detroit, Michigan United, People's Water Board, Solidarity, Voices for Earth Justice, and Zero Waste Detroit. Yeah, if we can only get everybody to work together. Now, each of these groups have very specific, very important programs, things they want to change, things they want to make better. But it's great they're all coming together. If you have not read the book by Naomi Klein, This Changes Everything, go to see this free documentary. It starts at 7 p.m. at the Detroit Film Theater at the Detroit Institute of Arts, downtown Detroit. That's just typical how busy you could be with Sierra Club, Michigan, if you wanted to volunteer. And just because you're volunteering for something else doesn't mean you can't volunteer for something else. I think the big part, what I just read about here, is that these are all information sessions. So this is a way you can get direct, scientific, well-researched information, which you can't get necessarily from corporate media. I'm sorry, it's true. And at length, in depth, and you can be there in person to ask questions and talk to people that are already working on these things. Highly recommend it. Okay. Oh, my goodness. I always like the New York Times slogan, all the news that fits to print. Yeah, it's all the time we have. You know, we got 5 minutes to go, and here I go. There was a in PressandGuide.com an opinion from Regan Ford, or Regan Ford, R-E-G-A-N. He is resident business owner of Dearborn, president of the Southwest Outer Drive Neighborhood Association, and is on the Rotary Club of Michigan Board of Directors. Okay, and every couple months he writes an editorial in his opinion. This time, this is back from May 2nd, though. We didn't get a chance to share it before. Most of us here in Dearborn lived through one of the toughest economic downturns in recent history. The collapse of the housing market combined with the struggles of the auto industry forced a lot of good tax-paying homeowners out of Dearborn. Like many of you, I can still remember all the for sale and foreclosure signs posted in the front yard of what seemed like every house on the block. And the problem for him, and I can't read it all, I don't have the time, but those houses then, if vacant, are bought and often by people wanting to make a profit, and they become rental homes. And the problem with maintaining rental homes is a big one, not just from the side of the landlord doing what's needed, but the kind of people that rent and what they're doing to the property and what they're doing to the homes and the community that they're in. He said there are many, he points out here, to be fair, there are many responsible law-abiding renters, just like we have homeowners who are irresponsible. In my opinion, the problem has more to do with the failure to hold landlords accountable and inconsistent enforcement. And he feels that City Hall is not only failing to hold irresponsible rentals accountable, they are actually encouraging them. So what do you think? You might want to read that. Seems like Regan, in his points of view, it seems like he almost wants to run for mayor next time. Because he knows what to do. Yes. But it's good to get these ideas out there. Thank you very much, Regan. Because we got to talk about these things. And we've got to see if there are answers. And maybe we're not doing enough. Well, this was a national story, became a local story. U.S. Supreme Court, as of Tuesday this week, refuses to hear a case tied to Arab International Festival protest. A group of Christian protesters who demonstrated Dearborn's Arab American Festival in 2012 has scored a legal victory. Called the Bible Believers, the group of evangelical Christians filed a lawsuit in September 2012 against Wayne County Sheriff Benny Napoleon and Deputy Chiefs Dennis Richardson and Mike Jafar, claiming that law enforcement officials failed to protect them from an angry crowd of Muslims, quote, armed with bottles, rocks, and other debris, unquote, as they protested at the festival. A video in the incident of the group was posted on YouTube, and it later went viral. Well, on Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court opted not to hear the case, meaning a win in the free speech case for the protesters due to a previous ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit that said their right to free speech was protected under the Constitution. And so I just wonder if there's money involved, if the Wayne County will have to pay it. Now, usually there's money involved if you win a suit like this. But it's very clear that people have the right to speak. And if people were, if Muslims were protesting in a violent way against the Bible group, then that's not right. And that's the way it was seen by the U.S. Court of Appeals. I have to say that because the U.S. Supreme Court doesn't have an extra person anymore, their full contingent, an odd number. Some people think any number on the Supreme Court are odd, but it means that there's no one to break a tie. And so they've actually been sending back to the lower courts a whole bunch of decisions on all kinds of issues for the last couple of weeks because they'd be deadlocked. And there wouldn't be any purpose in continuing, you know. I mean, it would just be the same result as if they just gave the case back. So they're deadlocked. Why? Because the Republicans in Congress in Washington, D.C. refuse to even hold hearings on Barack Obama's very moderate conservative appointee for Supreme Court. So our Supreme Court is tied up, is gridlocked, thanks to the majority in the House and Senate in Washington, D.C., who are Republican. Thank you very much. Well, we're going to have to say goodbye for now. Coming up next, yes, our four-hour block of blues shows is going to happen today. Kitty Love can't make it in, but she's fine, yes. Just got some stuff to do, as we all have to do sometimes. And Mike Holloway, Go With the Flow, Mike Holloway, normally from 4 to 6 p.m. on Fridays here at WHFR. We'll have 4 hours of the best blues show you've ever heard. It's going to be fantastic. And he's pulling his CDs right now, and he is in the house. He's in the studio. And I'm going to say goodbye for now. And thanks for listening. It's WHFR.FM. Be sure to check out our podcast for previous shows like April 22nd for Mayo O'Reilly. Next Friday, we have 19th District candidate for judge. And his name is Gene Hunt. And he will be here for a half an hour interview. We're giving all of the candidates for that office who will be on the primary in August, and then, of course, the two top people will be on the election ballot in November. We're trying to get them all. We do have Ms. Bozzi, and we do have Mr. Hunt, and we're waiting for Susan DeBaggia to tell us when she wants to come in. That's all for now. Thank you for listening. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. WHFR Dearborn.
Talking away, I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today's another day to find you shining.